नानान्त्वा गणपतिगुं हवामहे कविं कवीनामुपमश्रवस्तमं ज्येष्ठराजं ब्रह्मणां ब्रह्मणस्पत आनश्रृण्वन्तुतिभिः सीदसातनम् ॐ श्रीमहागणपतये नमः सदाशिवसमारम्भां शङ्कराचार्यमध्यमाम् अस्मदाचार्यपर्यन्तां वन्दे गुरुपरम्पराम् ॐ सहनावतु सहनौ भुनक्तु सह वीर्यङ्करवावहै तेजस्विनावधीतमस्तु मा विद्विषावहै ॐ शान्ति शान्ति शान्तिः। Comfortably. I'm very solid and still in my position. Taking a few long and deep breaths. Letting the system relax. Same time, I'm becoming attentive and present. So when I look at myself, usually I look at myself in relation to other things. I think of myself in relation to relatives, to friends, to objects. But can I look at myself dropping this without relation to anything else? Just bringing attention to myself. Similarly, when I bring my attention to myself, maybe I won't think about myself related to other things or people, but to different qualities. I can have different qualities belonging to the body, my height, to my background, to my ideas. And I bring attention to myself, but not to these qualities. Just to myself. Similarly, when I bring my attention to the God, to Ishvara, that which is behind the creation, can I bring attention to that, but not to any relation, not its relation to me, not Ishvara's relation to the world or to anything else, just attention to Ishvara. Also, I want to bring my attention to Ishvara itself, himself, not to any qualities, qualities all-pervasive, all-knowing, all-powerful, anything of this sort. Or, of course, if I have some deity I think of, even grosser, more tangible qualities I may give to that deity, if it's form or name, things like this. Can I drop those, not the qualities, but focus on Ishvara itself, on Brahman itself? Refer to Brahman as Tat, that, something that will not be tangible to mind, to senses, something that can't be perceived by mind, then there's some quality, something tangible to hold on to. But to focus on Tat, on that, I have to drop the senses, drop the mind. Otherwise, I'm focusing on some relation or on some quality. Once I focus this way on myself directly, not via some quality or relation, or I focus on Ishvara, on Brahman in this way, what is the difference? If I say Brahman, I'm focusing out there. I'm focusing in here. Again, I'm focusing on some quality, some idea. Once I put aside relations and qualities, I focus on source of I, or source of this, of the world. It's not possible to find any difference between the two, any differences whatsoever. sargastiti pralaya hetum achintya shaktim Vishveshwaram vidita vishwamananta murtim Nirmukta bandhanam apara sukham burashim Shri Vallabham Vimalabodhaghanam Namami. So last week we started focusing on the Aikyam, on the oneness. We first did the Tvam Pada Vichara, looked into what is meant by Tvam, by you. You meaning by I, right? And then Tat, when I look at that, at the, what's behind the world, at the God, Brahman, we did Tat Pada Vichara. Now it goes into then the whole Mahavakya Vichara. You'll say, I'm looking at the Aikyam, at Asi, you are that, or Asmi. You change it, Asi is you are, Asmi, am, I am. So just retranslate it automatically like this, am, is. So looking into this, which is the whole sentence, because you say is, what is, this is, what is this is that, you are that. So the whole sentence now, looking into the whole thing. So last week we saw that first of all pointed out, as was discussed at the beginning of the text, when you take up a sentence like that, tat tvam asi, that thou art, when you take it up, then what happens is, first of all, you have to look at the direct meaning, right? Vachyartha. Anything you hear, first take the direct meaning. If that doesn't fit, then you look for the implied meaning, lakshyartha, right? So for instance, if there's some sports event, you read in the paper and it said, Team A thrashed Team B, right? You first of all think of what can be vachyartha. It was a very violent thing, even though they were playing some simple, calm game, whatever it is. Some sports they do thrash, unfortunately, but not that kind of sport where it's not like this. So then obviously you'll go to the implied meaning, which would be they won by a lot. They did much better than the other ones. That's really what you go to mean. So you go to the implied meaning. So here the same thing. You, when I take you, I take I as an individual, I'm limited in space and time, and that, the God, the Brahman, isn't limited in space and time. I have limited knowledge. No matter how much I know, I can know just, you know, like what I know compared to all the possible knowledge is, you know, literally nothing. But then the God is all-knowing. All-powerful and limited powerful, all these things. So here, the vachyartha doesn't make sense. How can I be that when I'm this limited one that's unlimited? Doesn't make sense. So have to go to lakshyartha. You have to go to the implied meaning. So that's the main thing that was pointed out. And we looked into each one closely so that we can see why it's one and the same in this way. So this is how started this section. And then afterwards pointed out something about how the language conveys these things, because it was something which was grammatical discussion on the one side, but grammatical discussion because of how we see things also. So that was in verse 38, where he said here, samsargova vishishtova vakyarto natra sammataha akhandaikara sattvena vakyarto vidushammataha. That the wise people don't accept that it will be samsarga or vishishta, but it will be the akhanda, the meaning of the sentence. So we went into in detail last time. We said, some sentence will be samsarga artha bodhaka vakya. Samsarga artha bodhaka vakya, a sentence, a vakya, bodhaka, which brings to light, you know, makes something known of what, the meaning of what, of samsarga, of some relation. So a dvaiti will really like this very much, because a dvaiti likes, I have my relation to the God. There's a God, I'm the devotee of the God, And so I feel very wonderful in the presence of God, and the God I feel is protecting me, all these things, which is very nice, right? But then one has to look further. So you ask, who is the God, or the God all-powerful, all-pervading? Who are you? Oh, I'm the servant of the God for me, and the God is helping me. Well, look further. Okay, that's something. But is that the end of it? Yay, I'll do enough and the God will take to heaven. And then what? Then I'll be able to be more in the presence of God. But who are you behind this? Don't worry about that. I just want the God to help me like this. So it keeps that. And actually, that keeps some ego intact. Because ego is, I am this one. I'm the devotee. Earlier on, wasn't as pure, as devoted. Now I feel more pure. I don't do as much silly things. And I think much better of people. I don't think badly of them. I see everybody's like the devotee of God. And so I'm not seeing differences as much. So it does good. There's nothing wrong with it. But it's still, to stay in that state keeps some ego intact. Here's the God, and I'm this limited. I'm not that in this way. So that's one type of thing. Now, so a sentence like that will imply some relation, and different things can be involved, right? Like, I went to the market with my friend and I bought these apples and I brought them home in the bag. So many things will be involved in this way. We call it karakas, different things involved. You have a subject in the sentence, you have an object, you can have instruments like the bag to carry, or I bought it with the money, and I bought it for my neighbor, for my family, so somebody who it's for, and I brought it from there, and it was in the market, in this stand, the location, all these things, it expands, brings your attention to all these things, as all these things are involved in that type of sentence. Then we said it's not that. The other option is the Vishishta Artha Bodhaka Vakyam, the sentence. In English, we go, when we're explaining it, a lot of time when you have a long word like this, which is a conjunct word in Sanskrit, you port from the end back. That's really how the meaning usually goes. So in any case, so the sentence which explains, which brings to light the meaning of some sort of attribute. That's really it is, an attribute of that. So who is the God? The God is the creator. Right. I'm not like, we'll say no form. Nirakara, but saguna, the all-knowing, knows everything, right? All-powerful. What form? No, there's no form. No name, no form, but it's like this, still holding on to some sort of qualities. Again, we said, it could be the God has this form and this, you know, this color, and we can give qualities as well in that way, but also you can go without the formful qualities, just qualities like this. So this type of sentence, we said the example is Rama is brave and beautiful and powerful and wise. So you talk of different qualities, can be of the physical, can be of the mind, can be of the heart, all these things. I can give those, that type of meaning to a sentence. In this sentence, how could you do that? The only way you could do it is something has to be the primary, because we say Rama is wise and brave. Then Rama is the main thing. Wise and brave will be the secondary things, because they're going to be the visheshanas. They're going to be the adjectives or the qualities you give to Rama, right? So because of this, tattvamasi, something has to be primary. Okay, so tat has to be, because that's the infinite, the God. Okay, very good. So what are you? Oh, it's like an adjective. So you become like an adjective, right? Which is loosen something in the ego. Yes, I don't have the substance. But still, okay, so which are you? So if you're like the adjective, you've surrendered to God, you're whatever, just God's will is there. So meaning you're one with the God. No, but still I hold on to some separation, because the quality still has something, some identity of its own. Because there's the red rose, but there is the pink rose. I'm pink rose, I'm not the blue rose, I'm not the red rose or the yellow rose. It's still some quality, some identity has to be held. So does this identity belong to you or the God? If it belongs to the God, there's no more you. No, but I want to, you still have to hold on to something to keep that alive. I still have to be something separate. So Vishishta Advaita looks at it like this. In some way you're one with God, but some ways not. But that quality then belongs to the God, then not to you. How can it? So it puts a very awkward situation. In Vedanta we say, Vishishta Advaita is like saying it's dark and it's light. Which is it? Oh yeah, dark and light. You know, we're a democracy, or you know, some people feel it's like this, some feel like that. Let's not step on anybody's toes. Everybody can accept, can be this, that, some this, some that. But it doesn't make sense. It's dark or it's light. So again, it's an intermediary thing to help to melt away my limited identity. It can be a stepping stone. But to say that's the end of it doesn't really make sense. So that's why we say, no, it can't be that. So we said, so what can it be? It can be akanda artha, bodhakavakyam, that which is showing the unbroken, unchanging, the oneness, that it's not multiple. This is what the only way this kind of sentence will work. And why it's so important like this, that it's put in this way, is because I have an identity with, as we saw, with these two things, with relations and with qualities. And those are what my attention is so much caught up in. And when I think of the universal, God or universal spirit or Brahman, also I'm going to think in this way, because that's how I'm used to thinking. And the primordial part of that will be I and not I. I am this. Because that's where the separation, where I feel there's some separation there, and then the relation, the qualities built up and the relations built up. So when we inquired into each one of them, we tried to look beyond these things, these two things, qualities and relations. And once you look enough and then you're equating the two, you see, to equate the two, you have to drop these things. Relations and qualities have to be dropped to look at, are the two the same? And so by looking at both, it makes it easier to drop the qualities. If I just look at one, it'll be a little harder. Right? Like the meditation we did now, this one, when I look just at myself, yeah, I can see, okay, maybe I dropped the qualities. That maybe I drop. But then when you start comparing, then you're really looking at it closely, how can you find a difference between I and between that? Anything that you're going to find the difference, you're still holding on to relation of some sort, or quality of some sort. If you drop that, just go to essence, you cannot find a difference like this. This is why in Vedanta we say that it's not that Advaita needs to be proved. You don't prove. Dvaita is disproved. And we say for Dvaita, if somebody stands on Dvaita, says Dvaita, no, it is Dvaita, say prove Dvaita. You can't prove Dvaita, actually. You can't prove it. Well, we won't take up now this. People that have been around for some years, when we did the Panchadashi, there was one thing we looked at with the quality. Who can own a quality? Who can the quality belong to? You cannot prove that any quality really exists. We'll take it up. One of the classes now will take it up, so I don't just leave it hanging, because I know personally when going to the class, yeah, this is a very important point. We'll look into it at some point. So we'll look into it during this course still. Just that I don't want to go into that now, so we can focus what's in the verses. If there's a verse where it fits in, we'll look into it. Otherwise, we'll just take it up one of the classes. That really speaking, any quality, you cannot really say it exists. In the end, because if something is Brahman, consciousness is formless, you know, homogeneous, without any quality, anything, you can't connect a quality to it. That's simple. But really, logically, it can be shown pretty easily. So nothing can really have a quality. So a quality has to be some sort of superimposition. It can't be the reality. Okay. And that's the short explanation, but we'll look at it more deeply within next week's at some point, because it's a very, very useful thing to look at in what we're doing. Like this. So in any case, let's go according to the text, and again, we'll definitely look into that discourse. So we're in number 39 now. So let's first read it here. Pratyagbodho ya abhati. So dvayananda lakshanaha. Advayananda rupascha. Pratyagbodhaika lakshanaha. One that shines is the inner individual, consciousness, is the nature of the non-dual or unlimited joy. And the one which is the nature of non-dual or unlimited joy is indeed none other than the inner individual consciousness. So if you remember, we also mentioned last time, you can have A equals to B, but B doesn't equal to A. The ring is gold, but gold isn't ring. You can't say gold is ring. Then it's not necklace. Then it's not just a, you know, some sort of blob that is melted down in some sort of blob form like this. Right? So A is B, ring is gold. But B isn't A, gold isn't ring. You can't say that. Right? So here somebody can say, yes, you know, same way. Oh yes, you're the God, but God isn't you. Like this. So somehow like this it can be pointed out. So here it says, no, this one is that one is this. You can't look at it another way. Okay? In this way. So one thing here is, okay, but how can I tell that? Why? How can you even say such a thing? It says, well, you have to look in the right place in order to understand something, to look in the right place. Right? Like again, we'll say this table is mostly space. You say, how can you look? I can feel it's solid. What do you mean? If I take my arm and hand and I hit real hard on it, it doesn't just go through like space. My hand hurts so much. How can that just be space? What are you talking about? So you have to learn, look at it in the right manner. Then you can see, understand why it's space. You can understand, or with the proper material, with the proper instrument, you can probably look at it closely enough, see it's mostly space. You're sure that can be done. There must be some sort of microscopes that are strong enough that you can at least have some idea about it. So in any case, you have to look at it in the right way. So here it starts with pratyagbodha. Pratyag is innermost. So innermost, what is the innermost knowing? This innermost awareness, look there. That, if you want to see this, look there. You're not going to find it by looking out somewhere else. Again, out, then connection to things, and then also not looking as much inside. Yes, I understand it's not the other things, it's me. And I have some ups and downs, but I'm fairly balanced. And my body doesn't bother me too much, and I'm more patient with it. But then when I hear certain things, you know, it does pull my attention out. Okay, you're looking at some other things, other qualities. So we have to learn how to look within. So to look within is not a technique. It's not yoga pratyahara, where I will quiet the mind and I will forget the things. It's through observation, understanding. So I identify with the body, but then I have to see, am I the body or am I something more within observing it? Right? If with this understanding, then I will know that I'm, if I really understand, I'm knowing not the body. So the body, okay, it's there, functions, whatever. But it's I'm not identifying with it by understanding I'm something deeper. Physiological functions, life and aliveness, prana, I'm also something deeper. Right? Thoughts are there, but am I thoughts or am I something more internal to that? Internal, more subtle, not that. You know, there's no physical internal here. Physical internal. And Swami Shivananji, he said that when he was a doctor, and then he studied Sabindanta, and he said, as much as he has, you know, cut open bodies as a doctor, he's never seen the Atma in there. Because you say it's internal, okay. If you cut open the body, Atma should be in there. You know, you won't see it that way. So internal, it is internal to me, meaning more subtle, more closer to myself, if you want. So not physically internal. Physically internal doesn't work there. Because actually, the moment you go beyond the physical, then there's no inside outside, the physical inside outside, where is it? When you know, I put the body aside, I'm aware. Yes, there are thoughts, yes, there are emotions, but where is inside and outside then? So it can't be the physical in and out, the understanding. So also then there's thoughts, there are emotions, there's the intellect. Then eventually I come to, I'm aware, right? So I have to come to what is more, most internal. Pratyaksa. Pratyak, the most internal. In the Kathopanishad, I think it was, where it said, Paranchikani Visrajat Swayam Bhuhu, something like this, saying, the God has made us with senses going outwards. So he spoiled us by doing this. Yes, I want to know Atma, but my eyes are looking out. And my ears are listening to nice things. And my tongue wants to run out and taste all these different nice foods and tastes. So in this way, we can blame the God because you made my senses going outwards. I can't see this. But passing the blame is not going to help. Right? There's something there. I'm the one who decides I want to see it. Nobody made you go and see that it's so important that I have to run there and see it. Right? Somebody we used to know, he used to go once a year to Paris. And what happens, people go, tourism, usually people go to see things. Maybe to a show, something, to hear things. Some musician, they don't perform much in this, you want to hear, so you travel to the next state and go hear them. That may be also. But he would go every year a certain time of year for eating. Because certain foods, then certain seasons they make, and you can get it there in Paris, so he'd go there once a year for that. So tourism for eating. Yeah. So the tongue pulls him halfway around the world every year like this. So the thing is, but going outwards, I'm the one who decided to go out and look for the things. So what I have to ask myself, why am I going out for that? I'm going because I enjoy it. Okay, enjoy, good. And then makes you happy. Yes, I'm very happy. For how long? Yeah, it lasts, and then after I enjoyed it a little bit, then you're just fine. Yeah, for a little while, but then what? Yeah, then something, I'll find something else interesting. I want to do something else, to experience something else. So one has to look into, okay, I'm being pulled out by these things. Where has it taken me so far? Have I reached where I want to? So one has to look into. So senses are going out, but I'm going out with them. They're very useful. They're very useful for, you know, getting along here. It's like if somebody is in the car and they're driving very fast and just zigzagging in into the traffic, and the policeman comes and stops the driver and asks the driver, hey, why are you driving like this? The driver says, well, I have the car, it's a fancy sports car, it's so nice, how am I not going to drive like this? I have to do it. What do you mean? Will that person's get the ticket or license revoked or not? Obviously they will, right? So they have a car they think is fancy and it's very nice to drive like that and fun. Does that mean that, okay, it was okay to do, that there was no, it was, they're the ones who decided they wanted to do. So I can see things, very good. But then I see and I want to see this kind of thing, I don't want to see that kind of thing. Why? That doesn't have to do with the eyes, I've decided. I want to eat this thing, so I'll go to Paris, you know, every spring or summer. It's not the Paris that made me do that, I decided to do it. So again, so blaming elsewhere doesn't help. You understand? But thinking about, okay, how much have I gone out? Where is it really taking me? Obviously, I'm going out. Can I just sit here quiet with myself? Well, for a little while, but then I get tired, so I'm itching to do something, to see something, hear, taste something, right? Nibble on something. Right. We eat. How much are we eating because I need it? How much are we eating because I want to taste the things, right? So in this way, it's because I'm not just content quiet with myself, I'm restless, so rajas is pulling me out. Mine is rajasic, so I'm pulled out. There's no other need for it. Yes, something needed to be done, I had duty to do, I need to eat something, yes. Okay, but the other parts I have to look into, because it's done because rajas is, I think I'll do some things and then I will find what I really want. But obviously we don't, or it would have done it like this. So this is what happens, okay? So. So then what happens is, okay, when I go more and more within, then there's the intellect, everything, mind, intellect, eventually awareness. Okay, awareness. Now, are you the awareness? Right. So the awareness, is it you as individual or not? Does it belong to you or is it a universal thing? Because if you think of it, when you drop the other layers, the limited identity, where is it? Like when you go to deep sleep, where is the individual in deep sleep? Right. The nice thing is, there's two wonderful things in the deep sleep. You get a break from yourself as individual, right? Everybody else also gets a break from you. So it has two very wonderful things. But the main thing, you get the break from, you're not the individual then, but the awareness we know is there. Because otherwise we couldn't say I had the deep sleep. So you weren't there, so who is the awareness? Is it you or is it the universal? Which one is it? To say it's me, the individual, I need to add some things to it. Without it, how can it be? So actually the interesting thing in the deep sleep, you, the individual, aren't there. Right? The individual is gone then. But the individual usurps it and it's my experience, right? It's like the politician, there's something good happens because of me. Something not good happens. Yeah, because those people did a lousy job, right? Like this. I don't want to take responsibility then. Now the thing, I don't have to wait for the deep sleep. When I'm doing things, I'm just present. Or just during the day to day, I'm really present. Where's the individual then? No individual. But then when the identity comes, I identify with them. I'm that. Okay. So this is what happens is that I identify, and actually that comes first. I as the awareness is first. From there the others arise. Because look, I have thoughts, I have understanding, I have emotions, right? First you have to be, I'm the awareful being. Without it, how can these be there? You can't have those without first being a conscious being an awareful being or the awareful being. So that's really the base, because you can go back just to awareful being. But you can't go to just thoughts, emotions, body, senses. You can't go to those without the awareful being. So where's the base? Which comes from which? Obviously, they have to come from the awareness first. That's the primordial, and these come afterwards. Otherwise, it wouldn't make sense. Okay, and that's also directly from our experience. So this abhati, this one shines. This one is actually self-luminous. The other thing, anything else, needs the consciousness to bring it to light. Without the consciousness, it couldn't be there. You wouldn't know it's there. You have to need the consciousness first. So it's an abhati, it shines, it's self-luminous. Anything else can only reflect the consciousness, like the mind, right? And saha advaya ananda lakshanaha. This one is the same as the advaya ananda, the ananda which is which is without limitation. Now what happens is, Ananda though, the Atma, you the conscious being, is the Ananda, and Brahman is also the Ananda. But it's put here on the Tat, and Tatpada. Because when I look at myself, I have the doubt, can that be? But when I look at the totality, yes, there it could be. Can the God be depressed? What do you mean, how silly? So can the God be elated? You know, in some ideas they'll say the God isn't happy because the people are doing naughty things, a dharma, and the God is happy because people are doing dharma, doing good things. That's, you know, first grade. Really speaking, you can't say God is elated or up or down. Like there's a story they say, Lord Brahma, right, creator, gets up in the morning and they say, oh, there's wonderful news. Your son Rama was born. Oh, very nice, very good. He goes, takes his bath, comes back. Because, you know, the 10 minutes there is years and years on earth. Comes back. Then his attendant said, oh, your son Ravana was killed. So now, is he going to be elated by one or sad by the other? What is he going to? So you can't say. So the God will obviously, the Ananda of no question is there. Now what happens is the Ananda itself, Ananda not excitement, right? The happiness of the mind that comes and goes, that's not Ananda. If we say that's Ananda, that we know is something that comes and goes. So Ananda will be the contentment, the peace. Now what happens is, when do you really find this? When you're pratyak, when you're withdrawn from the other things, right? This is the whole idea, I think, the Buddhist idea of mindfulness, or for us, same thing, you know, being aware for living is mindfulness. I don't think it's any different. But you're more aware, you're aware present, so you're more aware. So the more the awareness is there, less caught up in the other things, the more you feel whole, right? And the more that is, you don't feel limited, and that you feel that the peace, contentment, like this. Interesting. Each language has its, within it has, the words come with meaning because they come from other roots. English, since it's from many languages, probably a little harder to find and also not a linguist. So some people in English will say, yes, this comes from this. But it'll come from this from Latin or from something usually. So in Hebrew, shalom is peace. But the same root means to be whole. Shalem, shalom, same thing, to be whole. Very nice, nice. Here, shanti is that the, how do you say, the conflagration gets, what the word for it, gets put out like this. Sham, like this, becomes put out like this down. So, rajas gone, right? So, in this way, so that's where you find it. And that's where you find, how do you find? Well, the more you drop the different koshas, the different ideas, the more natural you are. It's your nature, right? You come back to that. And you come back to that deep sleep, you come back to that when you drop the other things. Okay? So this is the important thing like this, okay? So this is, says, and so that's why it's the Advaya Lakshanaha. The more you drop the separation, the more naturally it's there. Okay? Like, also, when we spoke on Ananda, we spoke of it. When I just in myself, joy or peace is Ananda. When I'm looking others, manifest as love. Because love, I'm not feeling. I look beyond the differences, the separation. It's manifestation, if you want, like this. Later it says, so Ananda, Advayananda Rupa, and also what is this Advayananda Rupa, the Brahman then, Pratyak Bodha Eka Lakshanaha. It is the same as the Pratyak Bodha, but it's Eka Lakshanaha, the one thing. Okay? This is the one place. The one place you'll find it is in Pratyak Bodha. You want to find it somewhere else, you won't find it. Because think of it, when in the meditation we're saying, okay, look at Tat, at that which is behind the world, but drop the relations drop qualities. Meaning what's left is the awareness. That's why we say it's the... that's why you don't find it through senses or mind. It's aparoksha, immediate. The only way you can see that immediately is drop those other ideas, drop the thoughts, drop the senses, and you know it directly, but directly it's the awareness which isn't separate from you, which is you. So it says that's the one place, the only way to get eka lakshana. Eka, the one way is like this. Try some other way, you're have to involve senses, mind, something, or conditions, certain condition. Right? I go to the temple, certain condition is, okay, I feel that, very nice. But that's a certain conditioning. So that condition, when that condition isn't there, then, okay, now it's not there anymore. So that also, you'll say, no, there it's not senses, mind, or this, I forget them, but just in those conditions, what about other conditions? Swami Shivananji, he would sing many things, a lot of them I'm sure were impromptu, and then they just became, you know, regular people. No, he'd say chidanam, chidanam, chidanvantahum, and he'd say, in all conditions, I'm knowledge, bliss, absolute. In all conditions. Not just in this specific, we're in a nice situation discussing these things, or doing bhajans, or doing yoga, something, now, in this, now I'm knowledge, now I'm bliss. Other conditions, well, not so much. Says no, in all conditions like this, because it's my nature, like this. So knowledge, I take knowledge here and but the knowingness in this way, I'm cheating. I'm like this. Okay. Now what happens is, anything else that I do with any other practice, like we just said. Before that, before I went to the temple, I'm this limited individual. I go there, and then maybe I feel something special. Now, okay, I'm not. But afterwards, then I come back and I'm again that. Meaning, that's not it. It's just conditional then, okay, in this way. So really what happens is, what was there before and after? The ego is there. The ego. And when something comes, somebody comes, that comes and brings along, very few come on their own. Bring, you know, the family, friends come. So ahankara comes, right? Ego. So as ahankara comes, brings the spouse, or brings the brother, sister, brings mamakara, mine. I-ness, then mine-ness will come. And when that comes, then certain attachment to certain things will come, raga. And with that, then once raga comes, then dvesha, dislike the things will come. So then you start having this whole party of things. That's why in the Mahabharata you have the Duryodhana, right? Dhritarashtra has the son, so the adharmic ones. There's not one, three or four, like Pandava's five, right? But a whole slew. One comes, the whole all these things will come along with. Right? Think of it, when the mind is in a negative mood, or then more, everything becomes negative. So many things come, add and add. So that's why Kaurava, so many. When the good quality comes, when the mind is, you know, more peaceful, you're more content with things, it's simpler, fewer things. Pandava's just a few, like this. So in any case, so ego identified one is there, like this. So really speaking in this way is that the separation is this identification causes this idea of separation. And so one has to look into it, to look into what is, it's an idea that's separating in the end. Have to look closer and closer at it. And what happens is some things are very easy for me to look beyond. Certain things, no problem. Certain things, though, those are the things I have more identity with. Right? So those are the things that catch me. Those are the things I haven't looked into and inquired into. That's my identity is there. For you might be nothing, you don't identify with that. Oh, no big deal. Like somebody's very much identified religious thing. And so they're very much identified that. And that's actually on the one hand, something that pulls somebody up very well. On the other hand, a strong identification with that really gets one stuck as well, because that's something that's very hard to break, that, like this. I've heard from, you know, people who teach Vedanta a long time at this, they say that's the hardest, because to somebody who has some deeply ingrained belief in the religion, the God, and to say you're that, you know, they can't take it. They'll say blasphemy, and they can't, hard to take it like this. But I have some identification with that. That's something that my ego's there. And politics, I don't care. Yeah, whatever. The God, you know, the God's taking care. Somebody else, the religious thing, they don't have as much that strong attachment, but they have strong political identity. So different things is just one example, but in so many ways, where's the identity stronger? That's where I still haven't looked into it closely enough. So that's why Viveka needed to look into. I look into, okay, these ideas I have, these beliefs I have, they're ideas. They're nice, they're useful, but they're still thoughts, they're ideas. As useful as they are, they're thoughts, they're conditioning. Okay. So Viveka has to be there. And how do I know the thought is there? I'm aware of the thought. Am I the thought? If the thought is there or not, I'm there. Yeah. Just a small side thing like that. One time when the Dalai Lama was asked about something about, you know, things keep going like this, then, you know, the Buddhism might go away. He said, yeah, so it served its purpose. If it goes away, but it goes away. How? What religious leader would say that about their religion? Phenomenon. But in any case, so this viveka needed, and then of course, when there's some viveka, then some vairagya needed as well. Because just I have the viveka, and the viveka, I see how this thing I identify with is not me, and then it's not mine, what is really mine. Right? But then what happens is, with that viveka, I need to have some vairagya in order to, otherwise I can just intellectually separate, but then very easy just to identify with. Yeah, the politics, it goes like this, oh, sometimes like this, sometimes like that. I understand, but then I get all rallied up and worried, why is it like this, why are these people ruling, why those people, what's going to happen, all this. Some vairagya needed, because I see, okay, vairagya, the world is going to appear, it's going to go through changes in some ways, it'll come and go. Whatever it is, it's there momentary, right? And this we have to see as vairagya. But really, everything just comes and goes, appears, disappears. What is there to hold on to, really? So the vairagya needed as well, because that helps also to loosen the hold of the different things that I identify with. Okay. So this is very important, like this. Okay. So, in other words, in order to see this as I'm the egoless awareness, then I have to drop these things. They say then I have to become a nobody. Have to be ready to be nobody. Because a somebody, the ego is the somebody. I'm somebody, something. And I'll tell you, some Mahatmas I've seen can be great scholars, really know, but very, very simple and humble, because they understand that they don't identify with that. And that's more difficult when you have an achievement. It's more difficult probably not to identify with. You worked hard at it, and also it puts you aside from others, and others will also respect you because look up to you. So it's actually more difficult in that way. But in any case, something that one has to look into then, that what am I really? You know, if I'm a somebody, what is that somebody? It's an identity. And that identity, it's the ego constantly changes and changes what it identifies with. How many times during the day? Can try, take one day, look at the whole day, and just see how many different things Did the ego identify with and change identity? See how ridiculous this is, how silly it is, like a comedy, right? Like a little kid that's thinking all these different ideas about themselves. My God, how silly I am. And we take that on and we see through it, very good, but then next moment something happens, they get all caught up in it again. Wow, amazing. So, have to be ready to drop all these identities, because what happens is in jnanam, it'll actually discuss that the next verse, in jnanam there's no jnani, if you want to say. There's only jnanam, because I'm the impersonal awareness. That's why we said pratyakbodha, the innermost awareness. Can you say it's you or it's the God? You can't say. To say it's you, better to say it's the God, because to say it's you, meaning still there's some idea, still I'm a somebody. But really there, there's not somebody in this way. So this is an important thing, okay? In this way. Now, what happens then is everything I experience within the light of awareness, right? It says it's advaya here, non-dual. So, yes, between me and objects, there's dualism. But awareness, you say there is awareness and object. You say, yes, I'm aware, and there's awareness, and I'm aware there's a cup, I'm aware of my arm, I'm aware of the thought, I'm thirsty, so I'm aware of something. You'll say like this, that there is still multiplicity. But not really. You're saying I'm aware of, but I'm aware, right? Now I'm aware, so I'm aware of table. Meaning aware, there is awareness. And what is table? It's awareness plus some sight, plus some feelings, plus some thought. But it's awareness plus some ideas that are added to it. Because think, when you're just aware, is awareness, okay, awareness is going, but it hits the table, it's blocked by the table. Maybe my eyesight is, maybe my hand goes that far, can't go further. But awareness is just aware. It's not affected by table there or not. Right? It's like space isn't affected by anything in it or not. Same way, awareness, just things are within the awareness. Can they touch the awareness? No. If they touch the awareness would get limited by them. So how can they be there? You know, exactly like the movie and the characters, that you can't separate them, but the light isn't real, it's the light that appears as them, because I'm aware, and then everything else as though is within the awareness. But the awareness, whether they are not, isn't affected. Right? Light of the movie, whether there's film or not, isn't affected. Same light appears as these things. That shows our experience closer than anything else, because I'm aware, and aware is one thing, unbroken. Other things, what do they have to do with it? They somehow appear within the light of awareness, but not touching or affecting it. Again, once I go to intellect, to mind, senses, body, then yes. But just from awareness perspective, because these things, my koshas, are also within the awareness. So that's why it's advaya. There isn't awareness and table, awareness and people, awareness and... They appear within the awareness. Right? Because otherwise, the awareness would be limited by them, would be affected by them. Something like this. But it's not. Very amazing thing. So that's why advaya. You can't say it's multiple. It's like saying there's the light and there's the movie. There's the projector and the movie. There's the clay and the pot. You don't say that. Right. The projector, there's the projecting light which appears as the movie. There's the clay which appears in the form of the pot. You can't say multiple things are there like this. So here it's the same thing. It has to be advaya. It doesn't work any other way like this. Okay. So that's here. So in the end I have to look. There's what we call the divisive or fragmentary thinking, everything separating, and that's what is causing this whole idea of the separation. And that's what has to be looked at. Vedanta looking into that more and more and negating it. negating through understanding. I understand. Because the thing is, as an individual, yes, I'll have to eat, I'll have to sleep, take care of the body, it doesn't get, it's not, if it's not well, yeah, those things as an individual are done. But the thing is, through understanding, I understand that these are as good as appearance from the deeper side, from the deeper perspective. So then this which is shining is myself, as the awareful being, is no different from the unlimited universal. This is what this is saying. You cannot say that they're one and the same. A is B, B is A. Universal awareness is you, your innermost being. Your innermost being is the universal awareness. Nothing else can, it can't fit in any other way when you really look at it closely like this. So this is what is being pointed out in this verse here. So let's finish with that today. Purnamidam Purnat Purnamudachyate Purnasya Purnamadaya Purnamevavashishyate. Om Shanti Shanti Shanti. Before we go, if anybody has any pertinent doubt or question.
I just had a couple of thoughts as we were talking about the senses and how they run out. And I made a little note that do people who cannot hear or cannot see, are they faster in getting enlightened? It's like they have an advantage. They're running at the, you know, they're running the race a little ahead, because the senses really are the devil. They really do take you out.
That might be why some of the monks don't speak, some of them have this thing.
Yeah.
Probably because of that, you know, the more you de-link yourself from the outside world, the more, you know, you can go inwardly. And there's that monk, remember, in that temple we went to where that monk hadn't spoken for so many years.
30 years.
Yeah. But simple life or disciplined life like this can be helpful. But those are tools for, but not the end in itself. Because the thing is, first of all, your mind has to be prepared.
Yes.
Otherwise, it'll just go happen. That's why, like, renunciation, monk's life, they, you know, something one has to be really prepared for, it's not going to work.
Yes.
And again, that's one thing, but the understanding is important. Then the mind is more sattvic, more, so it's easier to look into these things, but it's not the end in itself.
Yes.
When I was in Uttarkashi, I used to, like, for a week or so, do mauna when I was there. So one time Swami Premananji, he said, oh, you're so bright for mauna this, now you need to get to maha mauna, real mauna, meaning not just be silent, my mouth, you're not speaking for your mind, it's more peaceful, but really, the real mauna is, you know, I know the silence within like this.
Yes.
So, but yes, that's why these things are done. That's why any of these disciplines are done.
True.
Yeah. Yeah. But, and the thing is, that's why, yes, some discipline, that's why, again, shatsampat, we said viveka vairagya, some discipline of my needed, simplifying. But then all this has to be done through understanding. If it's not through, not through understanding, then the mind will just revolt. Through understanding, okay, then I see why.
Yes. No, that is so true. You know, that's why, I mean, for so many years, like I could say, I would never understand some of the rules of the religious practices.
Mm-hmm.
But now, as you understand, you realize that there is some validity to the rules, because they are, in a way of disciplining your mind to be able to make your mind more receptive.
Yeah.
And that's, in that logical way, you can understand some of those things and not just feel that they are a blind in position.
Because I'm guessing if there's certain restriction from religious perspective, yes. maybe in yes. diet and something, yes. and you're doing because you have to the religion you stick to, later, let's say later you become diabetic. Yeah. Now, okay, I have to give up sugar. You already know to do because you know that discipline.
Yes.
You
can
do
it. Yes.
So it can yes. be very helpful.
Yes.
And
we
talked about the nobody being nobody. I think that's also the Buddhist concept of the shunya, which is not nothing but nothing. Mm-hmm. Where there is you, it's yes. the same. Yeah. It's almost the same as here, where you just disregard everything.
Yeah, yeah. Like one monk said, I am everything and nothing.
Yeah, yeah.
You know,
yeah.
yeah.
It's
the
same. It's
the same.
Just yeah. small linguistic.
You
probably,
know?
Yeah, most probably. Yeah, most probably. Very good. Have a wonderful week. We'll meet next time.
Thank you.